Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, this is the AmeriChicks. I'm Molly.
I'm Kim.
And happy Thursday. We may as well be Friday because you know it's our special World War II Day. But we've got a special treat for you today. We've got a couple of folks in that we met during our World War II trip last D-Day to Normandy. And so we figured we'll just do Thursday and Friday World War II stories. How about that?
That's going to be a great day, Molly.
Yeah, you're going to have to get a little closer here,
okay.
Kim.
Okay, we're sharing a microphone here. So,
so
I brush my teeth.
Thank you. Thank you for doing so. So we are on 1690 AM KDMT, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, and we'd love for you to join the conversation if you'd like to. Phone number is 303-632-4160. You know, we like to look at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And there's a lot of things taking place in the news right now that we want to make sure you're not missing anything that's important, but you're not being overburdened by all the bad news either. So we're going to do a quick round on what's going on nationally that you should have on your radar. And then we're going to get to World War II stories. We have Guy Whidden here with us in studio, and he is 101st Airborne during the war. We also have Ralph Peters in studio with us from the Netherlands, and he has storiesfromthegraves.com. Check it out. He's got lots and lots of stories from veterans that he is collecting along the way. So we're just going to make sure that you have a real live history lesson here today.
Yep, it's going to be, Molly, I don't have this quite figured out how you and I share this microphone yet, but we're going to make that happen because everybody wants to hear what Guy has to say as well as what Ralph has to say. But first, what's on your radar, Mom?
Well, right now, there was just an ISIS terror attack, apparently, in Paris at the, help me say it, Ralph.
Champs-Élysées.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, you know, these terrorists are not slowing down at all. And there's a big election that's about to take place in France. And, you know, one of the people there is really coming down hard against Islamic terrorism. And I think that might have something to do with the attacks and the focus. But you know what? All of this chaos just makes us stronger. So praying for our brothers and sisters abroad in France and just saying, let's all keep our eyes on what's going on. If there are really people that want to take out our freedom, take away our freedom, take away our way of life, then we've got to call it what it is and set up a strategy to stop it.
Right. Absolutely. So, Molly, with that, we're going to be talking about France a lot. We met Ralph Peters and Guy Whidden when we had the great honor to go to Normandy for the 72nd celebration of D-Day. And Ralph Peters is a young guy who has just a real heart for the stories of our World War II veterans, and he does some pretty amazing things. And so we'll start with you, Ralph. Welcome. Guy Whidden, we have him as well, 101st Airborne, jumped in outside of St. Mary Glees the morning of D-Day. And, you know, Molly, whenever people hear that Guy is anywhere, they're like, I got to meet him. I got to meet this guy. Guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he usually has red lipstick marks all up and down his cheeks. So, so you know people are happy to see him.
That's right. That's right. So welcome, both of you. It's
Thank
great
you very
to
much.
Have you
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Ralph.
Yes.
We learned so much getting to travel with you throughout Normandy. You have a real heart for these young American GIs that basically freed France, Belgium, and your country, the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And you have really made it almost a life's work to get these stories out. And so tell us a little bit about you, okay?
Well, I started it, I think, a couple of years ago. The thing for World War II started when I was really little. So I was about 7 years old or something and going with my grandfather, who was a little kid during the war. And we would walk the dog and he would talk about World War II and, you know, the school where he went to when he was younger, all that stuff when you go with your grandfather on a hike or on a, you know, going out with the dogs. And so I got interested and I knew that my dad had a, you know, those old books like, you have Google and anything, but we at home we had like these thick, big books about every decade from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. So I was always interested in history. So I looked in it, and I saw this from the 40s, this book from the 1940s. So start looking in it, and it's like, hey, wow. And I would start reading, and then you see movies, and you read books. I remember that I had one book about, it was like a child book that mm-hmm. I read, that I wrote. And it's like really, that's really hit me off. I don't know what it is that I liked it so much. And then you get involved in it. And at school, we had to go, we have a British cemetery mm-hmm. in our town. That has about 300 soldiers buried over there who got killed in just across the border in Germany. And from school, on the 4th and 5th of May in Holland, we have Liberation Day and Remembrance Day is on the 4th and Liberation Day is on the 5th of May. And on the 4th, we had this remembrance ceremony at the cemetery over there. And they would ask kids from all the classes to come and stand behind one of the grave sites and put a rose on the exact moment.
Oh, wow.
And a white balloon. So yeah, one hand you had a white balloon and the other hand you had a white rose. And then one guy with a, how do you say it, like a Scottish...
bagpipe?
Yeah, bagpipe.
Okay.
Yeah, a bagpipe player would... just walk across the cross.
Oh, beautiful.
And then if he passes you by, you had to put the rose down and the balloon up. So as a kid, I always went there. So that's also triggered it. And then we went to the Mark Rotten, the big American cemetery, what we will talk about later on, with my parents. You know, everybody goes there if you live in the neighborhood. So we went there and I saw that and it triggered something. I don't know what it is, but it triggered something in me. And that's when I started to be really into World War II and, you know, read books and go to see documentaries. And
Ralph, yeah. This is absolutely fascinating. We're going to go to break. And
sure.
When we come back, we'll have some additional questions for you. And we'll be talking with Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne. We're the Americhicks, 1690 KDMT. And hang with us.
Like what you're hearing from the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the Americhicks program, email us at americhicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, at americhicks@gmail.com. That's the americhicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at americhicks.com.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation or visit her online at karenlevine@remax.net and tell her the Americhicks sent you. Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1522 and tell them the Americhicks sent you.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day's right around the corner, so call the pros at Predovich & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredovich.com. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you. I
got this feeling. Hey, welcome back. We are the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT 1690 AM. And we have two very special guests in studio with us, Molly. We have Guy Whidden with us, who jumped in on D-Day 1944 with the 101st Airborne just outside of St. Mary Glees. And so we're going to focus on him in just a few moments. We also have Ralph Peters, a good friend of ours. He is from the Netherlands, Holland, and he has a real heart for the American and British GIs, the Allies that freed their countries. And so in the first segment, Ralph had shared just how he somehow started to become so interested in this. But Ralph, one of the things that I find so fascinating is this grave adoption program that you're part of. So would you explain to our audience what that is exactly?
So the grave adoption program is a program in several cemeteries. And it's where local people adopt or take care of an American soldier that is buried there or on the wall of the missing. So this started way in 1945 when people who were liberated were really enthusiastic about and they wanted to do something back for being liberated. So what they did was they took flowers out on Memorial Day, the first Memorial Day in 1945, when the cemetery was completed as a temporary cemetery, and they would bring flowers back. And then a local committee was started, and they were handing out certificates for you could adopt a soldier. So a lot of people did that. So everybody in the area, it's a big area, but knows about it really. And it's really, I don't know how you say it, but it's really in their blood mm-hmm. nowadays. It's something part of the culture mm-hmm. where I live, that okay. you adopt the grave and everybody knows about it. And it goes from generation to generation. So how I got involved in that is because my great-grandfather adopted one in 45. And so it's been in our family for four generations.
And now, this is the same soldier's grave that's been in your family since 1945?
Yeah, that's my great-grandfather's.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So nobody in my family really knew who he was. So when I started adopted other grave sites in 2001, it's the first one I adopted, another one. Now I have about six that I adopted, and I have two in Holland, two in Belgium, and two in Normandy, France, and one English soldier at local where we mm-hmm. where I go now and where I live. And yeah, that's how it a little bit started.
Okay. And so this continues on. And so with the grave adoption, you kind of just make sure that everything looks good and flowers.
Well, for the arrangements around the cemetery, we have the ABMC. That's government, U.S. government.
Okay.
That's property. And the people who have adopted a grave are just putting flowers, you know, on special occasions. So like his birthday or his
nice.
Day that he died. Or what the biggest come out every year is Memorial Day. We have thousands of people on one day coming in. We have American flag and a Dutch flag to each grave. And there's one, almost every grave has flowers on it. Like thousands of flowers. It looks beautiful. It's a big ceremony, big thing where I live. So.
Oh, Ralph Peters, our good friend from the Netherlands, is talking about the grave adoption program. I did not know that this existed, Molly, until we'd gone to Normandy.
I had no idea that either, and I certainly had no idea how much the people over in that part of the world actually remembered the war and loved and appreciated the Americans and the Allies for the risks they took, the sacrifices they made to liberate their people. And so that was just really huge. That's why we're putting together this treasure chest right now, Kim, you and I, putting together all of these stories, as many World War II stories as we can collect, so that our future generations in America can hear those same stories as well.
Well, speaking of stories, we have in studio with us Guy Whidden. Guy was a young kid, really, when he jumped,
guy.
A very young guy, yes, when he parachuted in Normandy, France on D-Day. And so, Guy, would you tell us what happened? Just tell us a bit about that story.
On D-Day?
Yes.
Well, we were in England, and we had been in the marshalling area where we were somewhat surrounded by barbed wire fences and so forth, so that nobody would leave and maybe go into London and release some information about what was going on. So we were like under lock and key, and we stayed there, and we were fed very well. It was almost like in preparation for this was the Last Supper. We were getting stuff that we hadn't gotten since before we came over to England. We'd been over in England for quite a while. and the food was good, ice cream and steak, and it was great. And we had a lot of fun, and we wrestled and boxed and played cards and just had a great time. And then the night before, on the 5th, we trooped down to the planes. We were assigned to a certain plane, and that was and about 9 o'clock at night. We went aboard, and it was still light out, actually. This was on June the 5th, and we got aboard the plane, but prior to getting aboard the plane, we were asked the question, how many of you want to smoke? If you want to smoke, then you can't have the door open going across where you would be getting some fresh air coming into the plane, and we'd have to close the windows, we'd have to cover them over and so forth with curtains. And so they voted, and of course, most everybody smoked, so there were one or two of us that didn't smoke, so they voted to keep the door shut and be able to smoke. So
that's got to be hard to breathe, guy.
Oh, it was.
Talk about being a stressful night anyway.
It was horrible. Going across, it was, you know, you couldn't hear each other talk, the noise from the engine, and it was dark inside, and you'd see people would be dragging on their cigarettes, and they'd light up, and then you'd see something. But nobody was talking because you couldn't hear anybody. Most of them were on Dramamine, too, because they thought they might get air sickness and all that sort of thing. That had a tendency to make them nap a little bit. They would be napping. I didn't nap anywhere across because I didn't take Dramamine, and I had nobody to talk to. I was deep in thoughts. The stench was terrible. You know, there was sickness aboard, upchucking and urination and all that type of thing. So it wasn't a very pleasant trip across. And when we hit the Channel Islands at the tip of the peninsula whereby we were going into St. Mary Glees, now going over, we were flying right above the water to prevent German radar from checking in on us. Had the window door been open, we'd have had fresh air just drifting in. Some of the guys in the plane, a couple planes where they did have the door open, they even had water splash in on them.
Oh, my gosh.
Refreshing.
It was so low.
But we didn't have that. So when they said, when we got to the Channel Islands, then we went up to about 1,400, 1,500 feet. That was at the tip of the peninsula. And then it was like a roller coaster all the way down into St. Mary Glees. And we were standing up at that time, ready for the green light to exit the plane. And we didn't get too much fire coming in because we were one of the first planes. We were the first combat platoon to drop into France.
My gosh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, this was just told to me by Ralph here. He has
who knows
some
everything
information on that. But I knew that we were one of the first. So we were the first combat platoon, and so we dropped in. It was around a little after 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. in the morning.
Now, when you dropped, how high were you in the air when you jumped?
Well, most of the planes were jumped under 800 feet, and they knew exactly what altitude they dropped from because the pilots would report the information back to their base in England, and ours was reported back as being 320 feet or something like that. And, of course, later on when we went back to England, I kept a logbook of my jumps. Some of us did that, and it's in my logbook. It was 300. Wow. I had 300 feet down, and that's pretty low because it takes about 175 feet before the chute is fully deployed and all that sort of thing.
That's pretty quick, huh, Mark?
Yeah, that is pretty quick. So we're talking with Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, and he parachuted into St. Mary Glees on D-Day, 1 a.m. in the morning. How many parachute jumps had you done up to that point, Guy?
Not that many. We didn't jump much in those days. I think in World War II, a total of about 15.
Mm-hmm. And so did you know where you were planning to land? You knew exactly where you were going to land, and you landed in that exact spot?
Well,
how did that go that night?
Yeah, in the marshalling area, we had a sand table, and they had like little buildings and all that sort of thing. So we're pretty clued in to just about what was going to happen, but it didn't happen as planned. That's what made it probably more remarkable, and it was more successful in some respects. We were just jumped all over the place. It was confusing to us, but much more confusing to the Germans.
So you jumped in the morning of D-Day outside of St. Mary Galice. So what happens? You are now on the ground. So what happened?
Well, all I know is I hit the ground hard. Then I stood up, and something was coming toward me, and it was an equipment bundle, and they were in white, and it was coming right toward me, and they weighed several hundred pounds. And it had to have hit me in the head because I must have been knocked unconscious, because when I came up, I was in a state of confusion. And then things would light up. It was just like the 4th of July. Planes were coming in, crash landing, paratroopers trying to jump out before the plane would hit the ground. It was very sad. And so when I stood up, sometimes it would be dark. I was by a hedgerow, and in the darkness, I heard somebody give the signal that, am I American? And I was supposed to have a little...
The clicker, right?
Cricker.
The clicker.
Yeah, I was supposed to have a cricket. But I couldn't find it soon enough, and I was in a state of confusion because I think I'd been knocked unconscious. And I couldn't think of the verbal response to his. So I started yelling. I went to Cheltenham High School, and I was on the wrestling team, and I had a redheaded girlfriend, this and that, and anything. And this guy said, "You dumb so-and-so." He said, "I almost shot you." And it turned out that this fellow was from the, I think he's from the 82nd Airborne, although they were supposed to come in somewhat after us. At least shortly thereafter, we were mixed in with the 82nd Airborne for most of the day. So I didn't see any of my comrades for several hours.
Okay. Now let's have Ralph jump in here. Ralph, you know a lot about, I think you know a lot about Guy's particular jump. So what's your comments on where we're at right now on D-Day?
Well, he knows better because he was there.
Yeah.
It's his story. No, I met Guy, I think, a couple of years ago now. I think a year or seven, 8 years ago, through a mutual friend who was a World War II veteran also. And, well, he was with the famous Band of Brothers. It was Clancy Lyle. And Clancy was on Facebook, and we were talking, and Clancy had a buddy of him who was buried in Margraten. So he asked me, "Hey, Ralph, could you send me a photo of his gravesite, of the buddy that I know of?" I said, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So I went to the cemetery, took a picture very easily.
Okay, we are going to go to break. We're going to keep everybody on the edge of their chairs as we hear what happened after you found this guy's buddy. Yeah. So we're with Guy Whitten, 101st Airborne, D-Day, and Ralph Peters, the Netherlands. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Molly with the AmeriChicks. My friend Susan owns the longest-standing drive-in movie theater in Denver, 88 Drive-In. And it is that time again to open the gates for the 41st season this April 14th. Join them. Spend a beautiful evening under the stars, in the privacy of your car, or sitting on lawn chairs. Share buttery drive-in popcorn and other goodies with your family and friends. Admission's only $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. You cannot beat that one. For the most up-to-date information, like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook or visit the website 88drivein.com.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And obviously, we're having all kinds of conversations. We're loving it because...
Yeah, pretty soon we're going to have to put out the bloopers from what's taking place during the commercials here in the studio.
That's right. We have two very good friends in studio with us. Guy Whitten, who was a young guy, jumped in outside of St. Mary Galice. It'll be 73 years ago soon, June 6, 1944. And Ralph Peters, who is from the Netherlands, he's visiting America, and he's doing a number of different interviews, going to schools. They're both going to school, so it's great to have both of you here. When we went to break, Ralph, we were talking about how you met Guy.
Yeah, so I had a friend who was a veteran, World War II, Band of Brothers, Clancy Lyle, who was not in this TV series because he didn't like how he was portrayed and stuff, so he didn't go, so they cut them out. But he was there on every spot of the Band of Brothers series. So he asked me to have a picture of Dukeman, who was one of his buddies over there. So I took a picture, nothing like I do normally. So I took a picture, and in like 5 minutes I had it.
Of this guy's grave, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Of his gravesite. So I put some flowers next to it, you know, put flowers on and took a picture, emailed it to him. And then he said, oh, that's so nice. I'm really happy that I got those. And okay, that's cool. And I was, he said, oh, you know what? I want to, can you give me your address? I said, okay, well, that's good. So I gave him my address, and I think like a week and a half later, I got this package sending to me, and it was from Clancy, and it was there were two books. One of the guys was also from Banner Brothers, Weber, and Guy's book was in it, and in the other book, Clancy was mentioned in that book, and what he did was he had a pinstripe. he like every that's why I'm you know he could see where he was in, so he had like see I'm famous, I'm in the book. So and the other book was Guy Whedon, and I said, that's nice, you know. So I start reading the book, and another friend that I knew.
And what is the book, Guy? What's the name of the book?
Between the Lines and Beyond. It was my wife's thoughts, because it's based on 130-some letters that I wrote home to my mother. And it was my wife's idea. Go up in the attic and get those letters and bring them down, and we'll put a book out. So I credit my wife for having done most of that, the authoring and so forth.
And where can people, can we get that on Amazon, or is it available?
No, it's always been direct from my family.
Okay.
And it's $25. Actually, we've gone to $30 because we don't have many books left, and we never have made much money. I self-published, and it cost me $15 plus all the years and time we put in. It's a labor of love. And so it's $30 plus, you know, shipping costs, sure, which is about 38. But the book's fairly thick, so it's not a thin book.
Okay, and is there a website, Guy, or how can they reach you? Or should we have them reach out to us?
They can go to guywhedon.com.
Well, you know, I feel embarrassed about that. I'd have to get back to Molly and Kim and give you that information.
Okay.
Because I quite frankly can't think of it on the moment. That's part of what the rest of the family do. I don't do much of
okay,
that.
Okay.
So check out the Americhix website and Facebook, and pretty soon we will have Guy Whedon's information up, and you can get his book, 101st Airborne.
Right.
There aren't too many left.
Okay. Save one for each of Molly and I. We got to get those ordered. So, okay. So, we're talking with Ralph Peters from the Netherlands, and he is talking about how he met Guy Whedon. So you get this book. It's Guy's book.
It's Guy's book. And I have a friend of mine, Joe Conway, who lives near Guy. And we got in contact. And he says, yeah, I know Guy Whedon. And he's a very nice guy. And I talked to him, and he wants to talk to you. So, okay. So give him a call. So I said, okay. So I call him up, and we just start talking. And then later on, a couple of months later, I was with Joe, and he said, you know what? Wouldn't it be cool if we could bring back some veterans? So we planned a trip for three World War II veterans, and Guy was one of them. We had a guy who was a paratrooper. We had another paratrooper from the 13th Airborne, but they never jumped because they were canceled 17 times. And so he never got that, you know, that feeling of being in combat. And but after the war, he was a CIA agent in Asia. And the other guy was a 2nd Armored Division. And he came ashore on Omaha Beach a couple of days later and saved the 101st near Canton on a mission that they did because they were knocked down. And you can see it in Band of Brothers when then they came in, the tanks come in. So he was one of those guys. So, and they were all a little bit younger then, but no, some of them were not able to travel anymore. But anyway, Joe and I put this trip together. And that's when Guy and I, we talked on the phone a lot, but for the first time then, that was in 2011 that we met, really. And since then, we've been on multiple trips together, and I stayed at his house sometimes, and I know his family, and that's how we became really good friends. And in 2011, we thought, you know what, it would be fun, because everybody, you know, about 101st, they wanna, you know, paratroopers are very liked in Europe.
Yes.
And so we had an idea. Well, maybe it's an idea to just put the pictures on Facebook of Guy, you know, because everybody wanted his autograph and his books and everything. So me and Joe started this Facebook group called Friends of Guy Whedon. that's still active if you want to join up. So we started that Facebook group, and everybody's on it now, and he didn't know about it. So everybody said, yeah, guy, I'm following you through Facebook. But the only ones who were putting everything on was me and Joe. And so I got all these messages from people like, oh, yeah, I was in college. Or, you know, I know him from school, and, you know, your son was in my school. You know, all these, like, you know somebody. So nowadays we have over 2,000 followers on Facebook.
Wow.
So every now and then we put pictures of him and when his birthday is. And this morning we put one just for him. I just took a picture and put it on and said, hey, everybody have a great day. And it's like all these reactions, like 80 reactions, and it's so much fun that we can do that and put every trip that he's here in Holland, or we go to France, and we just have a little, you know,
that is
pictures on it.
Yeah, that is so cool. So you guys know each other. Let's go back to you though, Guy. We have gotten to the point where you have jumped in and you're hit by an equipment pack. You were unconscious. Now somebody comes. You're able to identify yourself as an American. What happened then?
Well, I joined up with this fellow because he suggested I stay with him because he almost shot me. So I agreed to that. So we went toward St. Mary Glace, and at that time, at that point, shortly thereafter, the 82nd Airborne were coming in and dropping. Their mission was to liberate St. Mary Glace. So they were dropping right into town. And there was one building that was burning out. It was all burned out, and flames were coming up through the top of the building, and paratroopers were being actually sucked into the fire.
Oh, no.
So that was a horrible sight to watch. So we were about to go into St. Mary Glace, which was an 82nd Airborne mission, but one of our guys was another 101st Airborne guy, and he said, hey, Whitten, we're not supposed to be here. Our mission is somewhere else, closer to Utah Beach, and that's where my cousin came in, his lieutenant with the 4th Division. We passed each other very likely on the road coming in. The 4th Division came in on Utah Beach. So that was a pretty wild day.
Yeah, okay, so you're with this other guy that you've obviously bonded because he was going to shoot you and he didn't, so now you have totally bonded. So, so you said you passed your cousin. So were you trying to get over to the 101st Airborne, or did you...
No, our mission was to knock out one of the big guns near the beach, but the Air Force had done a good job on that. So that was already accomplished before we landed. We didn't know that. So we went out there, but then we drifted right on back towards St. Mary Glace because our mission was completed.
Okay.
So there was a lot of walking that day.
Oh, that's for sure. Let's go to, and this is something I'm going to learn a lot about, and that is Margraten, right? There was a battle there. Now, Guy, were you involved in that battle?
Yeah, it wasn't a battle. It wasn't a battle.
Yeah, it wasn't a battle? Okay, it's a place.
It's a place where the American cemetery is right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So during the war, at the end of 44, when the southern part of Holland was liberated, they needed the place to put bury all the dead. So what they did was they didn't want to put it in foreign soil, like enemy soil. And because of that, they needed a good, because you have to remember it's 1944 and they have no roads like it is today. So they need a place that is like a land where they have a good road connection to all the big cities. And they place it next to the big, for us, it's bigger cities, but it's not compared to Denver or anything. But between Maastricht and Aachen, Germany, because all the guys who were on the Rhineland campaign, they needed to be buried. So they had to have good transportations from Germany back to Holland to be buried there. So
awesome. So we are talking with Ralph Peters and Guy Whitten about World War II. So stick with us. This is the AmeriChicks on KDMT, and we'll be right back.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II Project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Hey, you know real heroes don't actually wear capes. They jump out of the airplane in the middle of the night. Let's go back to maybe, let's say, June 6, 1944. 1 a.m., Guy Whidden is jumping out of a plane. He lands right near St. Mary Glees. And boy, oh boy, this story is good. It's a good one. You want to get his book, Between the Lines and Beyond. And he's in studio with us right now. Even also, check out on Facebook, Friends of Guy Whidden. You're going to want to hear as much as you can about this guy. He's amazing. He's an awesome guy. Kim and I had the opportunity to meet him last year when we went back to Normandy for the 72nd D-Day anniversary. And so we have Guy in studio, and we have Ralph Peters in studio. And Ralph was starting to tell us a story about the Margraden Cemetery before we went to break. So let's continue there and then tell the story about you and Guy in the cemetery together and what happened.
So when the Operation Market Garden was going on in 1944 September with the British and the American and 101st and the 82nd Airborne, the guys who passed away went to the temporary cemeteries near Nijmegen, Eindhoven, and Arnhem. But afterwards, these were all abandoned. If not, how do you say that? They didn't exist anymore, so they had to bring all these bodies to one permanent cemetery, and that became Margraden. And so the first time when he came over, we went to the cemetery because a guy has a couple of guys that he know who are buried over there, and one is very close to him, where he fought into D-Day with, and then he guy got wounded in Market Garden in 1944.
So, Guy, tell us about your experience there at the Margraden Cemetery.
Well, Margraden is up on the Belgian border in the Netherlands, and the land was given to the United States. Very nice gift. And you can look all around Margraden into the distance, and you can see beautiful farmland. You don't see junk in front yards like we do have in the U.S. and some parts of the country. We need to think in terms of cleaning up our country.
True that.
You don't see that in the Netherlands. Anyhow, it was a rainy day here just a few years ago, pouring rain, and we arrived at Margraden Cemetery for the first time. And we checked out to find who might still be buried there, comrades, and I found that only two of our comrades had not been returned to the United States. And that was one of our lieutenants, Lieutenant Brungard, and also Chuck Smollinger, who was a good buddy of mine. Both of them were buried there. So it's pouring rain. After we find out where they are, we have our umbrellas up, and we approach Lieutenant Brungard's grave site not far away. My buddy wasn't walking too well. He's since passed away. He was a sergeant. And all of a sudden, the rain stopped almost abruptly, and the sun came out, and we looked around. We couldn't believe it, and he said a little prayer by Lieutenant Brungard's gravesite, and it was very, we just couldn't follow what was going on. Divine intervention, no question about it. So he couldn't go walk all the way down to where Chuck Smollinger was buried. So he had to return to the building where we arrived at. So I went down to Chuck Smollinger's gravesite, and I started a conversation that we had just before he died in the Netherlands because all three of those in my squad there were killed, all but me, and I've always had bad feelings about that. I could not have been leading them in the right direction. Anyhow, he and I talked to him, and it's almost like he was listening. And I said, Chuck, let's talk about what we started to talk about before the shell killed three of you. So anyhow, some lady, to make a long story short, some lady came running across the field. She said, Mr. Whitten, we have to leave now. They're all waiting back there at the bus. So I said, okay. I said, bye, Chuck. We went back to the bus. Just then the sun went out, and the rain came down, pouring rain for the rest of the day. That's divine intervention. God gave us some time to talk to these veterans who had died so long ago, and it was just like a reunion. The other lieutenant, Lieutenant Atkins, we had two of them, was killed at the end of the war, so we lost both of our lieutenants as well as several of our comrades, a platoon of 40. So that's the story of Mark Rotten.
Guy, wow, we haven't heard that story. That's something else. Guy, when we had the honor of traveling with you last year in Normandy, I was a little shocked. I felt like we were traveling with a rock star. The people of Normandy are so grateful to you guys. Even today, they tell the stories to their kids. What's one of your most memorable stories of Normandy?
Oh, while there. Oh, I remember one time toward the end of our time there, we were there for about 35 days. Middle way of it, maybe 15 or 20 days later, we were quite filthy. You know, we hadn't bathed or done anything for 15 or 20 days, and the stench wasn't pleasant. And we were out in the field. The Germans weren't in that area, and we found a pump. We took all our clothes off, and we started to clean. There's nobody else around, and we were all washing ourselves and everything. And all of a sudden, French came from every direction. They seemed to come out of the bushes. Women, children, French people, and we don't have a stitch on. Well, we had to get used to it in a hurry, and they're shaking our hands and patting us on the back. And that's my favorite story. Yeah, that was a rather embarrassing moment, but we survived it.
Yeah, yeah. Give us another one. Give us another good favorite story, because you have so many.
Well, a lot of them were in the Netherlands, too. I did have one occasion where we machine gun opened up near Carentan, and it was coming down the hedgerow, and all my buddies were dropping to the ground, and they yelled at me, said, hey, Whit, drop down, the machine gun. But I was so mesmerized by the tracer bullets coming toward me that I never dropped down, and one of them went through the fleshy part of my neck. So that's divine intervention. Been another inch, I wouldn't be here today. Yeah. So I'll always remember that.
Now, when it hit you, did it feel like a snake bite or a sting? What did it feel like?
Well, it wasn't painful at all. It just, I knew I was hit somewhere, and I bled all day long, but it wasn't from a major artery or anything like that. I was drenched with slow bleeding all day long. Mm. I never went to it. And those same long johns I had on that day ended up in my house one day. And some guy heard the story, and he offered me $1,000 for my long johns.
Did you put such stuff?
Well, my wife and I went down in the basement. We couldn't find them. Oh. And I think that she and I had suggested some time back to throw them away. And then I've since seen this fellow about 2 months ago, and he said, did you ever find the long johns? I think they're gone. He said the offer still stands, $1,000 for them.
I just get some and just sell them to them. We'll just dye them yellow and make them look old.
Yep.
So Guy Whitten, you know, there's so many, like you said, you're seeing bullets going around you all the time. You know, you're parachuting in at night. You're seeing guys that are being, unfortunately, sucked into the fires. What kept you going every day? What kept you just strong, getting up and moving forward?
Well, I truly think God was with me all the way. I don't know what he was preserving me for. I often wonder, what have I done to deserve all this? But I don't remember any fear. And I think God put me that. I'm not a real brave guy, but I didn't have any fear. And I think it was God just put it in my mind, don't let anything bother you.
And you were how old when you went into the war, 17 or 18?
Well, I actually started out before I went in high, before I graduated from high school in the National Guard. My father got me out because they were about ready to go. The National Guard was being federalized. But then I had an appointment coming up to go to West Point out of high school. But I decided to drop that and go in because, you know, Pearl Harbor happened, you know, and that's when I went in. I was just turned 18.
Okay, Guy, we're getting very short on time. However, I remember that you said you have all these letters to your mother. I think you said that you all these letters told your mom that everything was fine. You were dancing and you were doing all kinds of fun things. Is that right?
In the letters.
Yes.
Yes. It's just before my wife passed away, she said, Guy, did you ever fight in the war? Just dance. She had a good sense of humor.
And you've still been dancing all this time ever since.
I've been dancing ever since.
Yeah.
Will you dance with me now?
You know I sure will. I sure will. And, you know, when we were in Normandy last year, we got to hang out at St. Mary Glees, and we would all hang out at the stop bar.
Yeah.
And the guys, you know, the veterans would all sit there in the chairs, and people would line up all around the square and the corners just to meet you. And they were just shaking, and they were crying, and they were so happy, and they wanted you to sign, you know, everything that they had. And just, it really made my heart feel so good that finally, somewhere in the world, there's a place where people really respect our World War II veterans and American veterans in the American flag.
That's true.
And it just made me feel
well,
really
they appreciate
good.
All Americans that go over to Normandy. They treat you just as honor, with a lot of honor, because even though you weren't in the war, you're Americans.
Right.
So it's a good place to visit.
Oh, it was really a special time. And we are coming to a close. We've had Ralph Peters from the Netherlands in studio. He's going to be in studio again tomorrow. And maybe we'll have Guy again. It kind of depends on what his schedule is like tomorrow. But it has truly been an honor to have Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, jumped on D-Day 1944. And Ralph Peters, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Also. Thank you.
And you won't want to miss the show tomorrow either. And so whenever we're talking about Europe and World War II, lots of times I'll just go to General Patton quotes. And this one kind of reminds me of Guy Whidden. It says, it's the unconquerable soul of man, not the nature of the weapon he uses, that ensures victory. And Guy Whidden, thank you to you and your generation for what you've done to pass on something better to the whole world. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
And so what we're doing is we are collecting as many World War II stories as possible and putting together a treasure chest of information for this generation and all future generations. You can read about history in a book, but it's nothing like hearing a personal story from somebody who was there. So if you know somebody, if you know a World War II veteran with a story they'd like to share, please let us know. Or if you have one of a family member you'd like to share, let us know. This is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, KDMT 1690 AM, signing off. Tune in again tomorrow at 5 o'clock. We'll see you there.